Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassami. I don't feel like I have a whole lot to say this evening. Not so much coming up in the mind. The theme is, I guess, preparing the mind for the winter retreat, preparing the mind for going inwards, for the Dhamma practice, and we'll be listening to teachings on a daily basis, unburdened by duties. So we have the retreat crew arrived, partially arrived. Not everyone's here yet, but a number of the retreat crew have arrived today, and so be about a week or so before we really start to enter into retreat. So we're still buttoning things up around the monastery. A few things still happening, and then we can really enter into the retreat mode. There'll be a time for group practice, there'll be time for solitude. It's this phrase that comes up in the suttas and makes an effort. So the practice takes effort. One makes an effort to reach that which has not yet been reached, to realize that which has not yet been realized, and to attain that which has not yet been attained. So recognizing that there's qualities within ourselves that can be developed that are not yet developed. Qualities that, and states of peace, states of well-being, and states of release from suffering that have not yet been reached, that we can make an effort to try and reach. So it's the we'll have a time where we give complete importance to those things that nurture, foster the Dhamma practice. There's certain aspects of the practice which are really easy to miss. It's actually very subtle. The Dhamma is very subtle, yet it's very precise. And the practice is actually very precise. So certain causes, if we plant them, we'll reach benefit, good results. Certain causes, if we plant them, we reap suffering, disappointment. A proper cause, a precise cause that we have to plant is that cultivation of right view. Right view. Longpo Cha would teach that he wanted his disciples to develop right view and a sense of effort and a contemplation of anicchang, which is uncertainty and impermanence. So with right view, when we apply that to our practice and the way we practice, the attitude with which we approach the practice, it's good to know that if we're hoping to attain something good in this life or a good situation for ourselves in this life, then we've kind of missed the point of the Dhamma practice. So it's not about having a good life or achieving some sort of good situation in this life. The point is to, you know, plant causes for an ending of suffering. And so it's not really about achieving or attaining a good situation, but it's focusing solely on planting wholesome causes. So it's like planting a tree. The teachers always use this analogy of planting a tree. So we plant a seed, we water it, we keep the insects away, we fertilize it, and then we just create wholesome conditions to allow it to grow. And so it takes a long time. A tree grows very slowly. It has its own pace. So it's just going to grow at its own pace. Eventually it'll grow into a mature tree. It'll bear fruit, and we'll be able to eat that fruit. But it takes time. It takes a long time. So we plant the seeds of Bodhi, of awakening, liberation. And we just water them with mindfulness. We live with mindfulness, with the four foundations of mindfulness, with the Satipatthana. And it'll grow at its own pace, depending on our parami, on our spiritual virtues accumulated through past lives and through practice in this life. And so we might not really get a good situation in this life. Some people who practice might have a lot of difficulty, a lot of suffering. And yet one doesn't give up the practice. Because with the cultivation of right view, you start to see the benefit of the practice. Even if one doesn't attain states of joy and happiness, still there's some intuition, there's some inkling that because we work through, we read the suttas, we work through them in our mind and come to an intellectual understanding and a rational acceptance at first. So this is mundane right view. We come to a rational acceptance of the teachings. We read the teachings of karma and rebirth, and intellectually we work through it. If we contemplate it rationally, we see that it makes sense. And then there's certain things that we might have seen and realized for ourselves already, such as the benefits of generosity, the benefits of holding precepts. We might see that that brings some sense of well-being, happiness. But then there's this clinging in the mind, so this is the deeper level that takes the Satipatthana to really start to see craving and clinging and how that brings about dissatisfaction, disappointment, suffering for ourselves, for others. We start to see how three types of feeling, pleasant, painful, neutral, how those have a result in the mind. A pleasant feeling, the default result of that is craving, wanting, pulling in towards oneself. So painful feeling, the default option, default result of that is aversion, pushing away. Neutral feeling, default option is delusion, confusion, distraction, wanting something pleasant, wanting something painful, wanting something other than the neutral, just something else, wanting to get the next thing. It's like this phrase in the Dhammacakka Sutta, like tatra tatra abhinandini. It's like delighting now here, now there, always moving on to the next thing. So with right view, it's not about trying to get the next best thing. It's not about moving on to the next thing, but it's about the Dhamma here and now. It's about the present moment. Ajahn Wan as a very senior disciple of Ajahn Mun. I've been reading some of his teachings. It's an English translation that just came out this year of Ajahn Hasapanyo in Thailand. He's done a really wonderful translation of the teachings of Lungpur Wan. It's the first time I've seen any of his teachings in English. And he says that he calls that if you're placing your practice off in the future, or if you're reminiscing about the past, that's called drunken Dhamma. And if you're practicing for the here and now, for a pleasant abiding here and now, that's straight Dhamma. And he uses these phrases in almost every single talk that he gives, it seems. So like reining in that tendency to reminisce about the past, or reining in that tendency to tatra tatra abhinandini, that tendency to delight now here, now there, always moving on to the next thing. So the practice is reining that in. So it takes effort, having to develop a contemplative mind, a reflective mind. And it's kind of like testing oneself too, trying to be peaceful in any situation. There'll be situations in our life, in our practice, come up to test us. Mara comes to test us in various ways. So we keep ourselves firm in our determination not to get disheartened by the inclinations, proclivities that rise up in the mind that can unsettle us, that can want us to run away from the present moment, want us to run away from the practice. And so everybody will have their own tendencies, but these things... we call the asava, or the kilesa, the defilements, will come up to, it's like obstructions in the mind coming up to test us in various ways. But if we're using the satipatthana, we can learn from them. So it's just mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of qualities we've already developed, mindfulness of mental qualities. So we say mindfulness, but it's not... mindfulness doesn't really... I mean, it's a hackneyed term these days. It doesn't really mean that much. It's like you might even hear it in the news, like we have to be mindful of the fact that, you know, terrorism is a problem in the U.S. or whatever. That's not really what we're talking about, though, in terms of the satipatthana, the sense of recollecting the foundations of practice. So we have to have some sort of anchor, some sort of foundation. In the Thai forest tradition, mindfulness of the body is... it's a contemplation of impermanence, anicchang. So we have things like the asubha kamatana, which is the contemplating the unattractive nature of our body or the bodies of others. We have the charnel ground contemplations. This is just a contemplation which is really wonderful. It's an entry into not self. Imagining one's own body as a corpse. It's a very natural, not as a morbid kind of fascination with corpses or morbid contemplation, but just imagining this is the inevitable result of the body, that when one experiences death, say death of a loved one, then the contemplation is, I too will be of that fate. And so the charnel ground contemplations are imagining oneself as a death contemplation, but also then the disintegration of the body. So it goes through the various stages of decomposition to the point where there's just bones scattered about, and finally those bones becoming dust and then blown away by the wind. And that's an entry into not self, imagining everything that we take to be ourselves eventually becoming dust and blowing away in the wind. This is a good theme to take for a period of retreat. Can we get to that point where we're just dust being blown away by the wind? Or is it me practicing, cultivating something so I can become something else other than what I am now in the future? Drunken Dhamma. That's drunken Dhamma. A straight Dhamma, practicing here and now, nurturing the seed, nurturing the tree, and the sense of self just dissolving into dust, blowing away in the wind. There, that's peace. That's anatta. Entry into anatta. And so it's like all of the cultivation, you know, the tree does grow. So it's, as the tree starts to grow, then there's inspiration there. We don't, but really like hoping for that time off in the future when the tree is bigger than it is now, that's not so helpful. Or like Ajahn Chah said, like if you, the tree kind of sprouts, but you want it to grow faster, so you go and pull on it. That's not going to make it grow faster. So, the Pachupana Dhamma in the present moment, if we just cultivate this Pachupana Dhamma, that's good enough. It's very simple. It's not something which is complicated. Actually, on a certain level, it's too simple. So we might think, well, we need more study, we need something else, we need to add something. But it's very simple. It's just body and mind, not self, impermanence. It's here and now. So it's quite simple. But there's that very strong tendency of becoming, tendency of the mind, onto the next thing, onto the next thing. So, getting ready for a sense of retreat, it's reining it in, but also not being really hard on oneself. That's also the defilements, that's also an obstruction. But it's looking for balance. It's not to say that study is a bad thing. It's extremely helpful, you know, when you're reading suttas. In the present moment, what's happening when you're reading suttas, the mind is following along with the sutta. That's incredibly wholesome. So that can be taken on depending on one's tendencies. If one finds that to be of benefit, or arouses energy, a sense of inspiration, then it's to be followed, to be practiced. You know, reading suttas, study can be extremely helpful, extremely beneficial. But then knowing the limit, knowing at a certain point there's enough information there, and it can be stored away for later. It'll come up when we need it in the practice. And we can't just do the practice on our own. There's a whole network of support. So we're able to let go of duties, the monastics here, bhikkhus, samaneras, anagarikas, and our stalwart upasikas, Debbie, Beth. We're all able to let go of duties based on 6 or 7 people who come each year to offer their services to the Sangha. So there's a sense of strong sense of gratitude there for that. Sense of this incredible support that we have, a network of support that allows us to practice in this way for for this period of time. And so the Dhamma, when you talk about Dhamma, it's also impersonal. It's something that it's not like a certain type of person has more Dhamma than another type of person if we speak strictly about personality. In the normal paradigm that we operate in, then there's like a cultivation of personality, or a judging of oneself or a judging of others based on personality. But the Dhamma is something completely impersonal. So when we practice, it's not really about like me having the Dhamma. It's not something you have. So if the practice is taken from the standpoint of like me and my practice, or me cultivating the practice, or me trying to change myself in some way, then it's can be good and wholesome. It can be good karma, but it's a little bit, it's not quite in line with Dhamma, or not quite in tune with Dhamma. It's more, early on, Ajahn Pasano kind of pointing this out to me, it's not about like you and your practice, but it's more about you learning how to step aside and let the Dhamma practice through you, and then it's right, then it's Samma, then it's perfectly in tune, if you're able to do that. And you see this in, you know, all across traditions. I've seen like Milarepa. I remember reading the teachings of Milarepa, him saying, try to practice without practicing. And I would think, this is maybe just some ultra profound, almost, you know, ridiculous kind of, you know, poetry, which is just kind of meant to sound good. But over time, it's like, yeah, practice without practicing. What does that actually mean? So it's like stepping aside and allowing the Dhamma to practice through you. Trying to get one's mind around that. What does that mean? So developing a reflective mind, a contemplative mind. And it's difficult to understand, but yet, like the Buddha said, like an effort should be made to understand. And this kind of knowledge isn't just going to pop up randomly. So it's the tree isn't going to pop up randomly without the seed, without being watered, without being fertilized. So we practice with this body and mind, not self. They're both not self. And we contemplate impermanence and a sense of going inwards. We spend a large part of the year here at Abhayagiri, giving service. We still have morning and evening puja and practice in the afternoons, but there can be more of a sense of going outwards. There's projects, work projects. But when it's done, just allowing it just to be finished and returning to the source, returning to going inwards is so important. Coming back to that original inspiration when we came to practice in the first place, nurturing that, giving importance to that. So yeah, I don't have so much to say this evening, but if any of that's helpful, please take it in, make use of it, and if it's not helpful, then you can set it aside. And I'll leave it there this evening. Sadhu karam dhamma se.